Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Icons, a podcast brought to you by These Football Times in celebration of our new magazine of the same name. Across these 12 captivating icons, we'll dive deep into their lives, legacies and the magic of some of football's greatest figures. Players who didn't just shape the game but transcended it, becoming cultural icons of their time. And one of these icons that we're going to talk about today spans on the pitch and off the pitch. For all the right and wrong reasons, and the person to take us through this is our very own player, our very own number 10, shall we say, Mr. Dave Bowler. Hello, Dave.
Number 10, yes, oddly. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, Rob, to bring this first part of the series to a close.
Yes, and who is the player who will be bringing to a close our first portion of this icon series?
It's one of the great footballing soap operas, I suppose, in lots of senses. It's Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah, I mean, a brilliant player. I feel like he was probably one of the players I kind of grew up with a little bit, Zidane, because you're watching him on TV in the Champions League, Juventus, and then obviously into Real and France 98 was kind of one of my big moments as a fan. But what's the kind of landscape? So Zidane kind of starts to make his name in the 90s at Bordeaux. Obviously, I've done a whole series on the 90s, so I kind of know a little bit about that period of time, but where does Zidane fit in this sort of football puzzle of history?
I suppose to the wider world, it all kind of begins when we get to Euro 96, and then when he moves to Juventus and plays in a couple of Champions League finals there. That's when he's beginning to become, sort of in European terms, well recognised as you know, obviously a player of supreme quality. They're able to control, not just control the ball, but to control games. You know, he's a sort of a, what they used to, in the olden days, we used to say was pulling the strings, but now it's the playmaker now, isn't it, I suppose, or as you say, the number 10 or whatever. Kind of, I suppose to a degree, he's inventing that role as he goes along, really. I mean, he's the one that he's making. You know, he's the one where we start to talk number 10, really. You know, that's when we begin to see that come into the footballing lexicon, really. I mean, Pelé had been a number 10 before, but we hadn't thought of it in those terms. He sort of reinvents a bit about what football does, and, you know, we'll come onto it later, but, I mean, he does it so successfully, he gets his own feature film off the back of it, which, I think is a, for anybody who hasn't seen it, we'll talk about it later, but you've got to go and see that film. You've got to find that, because it is a magnificent, and he's got a great soundtrack as well, but that's by the way. But I suppose, you know, it's when we get to 98, and so much of, for all the, you know, play for Juventus, play for Real Madrid, won Champions Leagues, all that, but it's Zidane for France, I think, that is the meat of the story in every possible way. He's a representative of a new France in the, you know, that is Algerian descent and in a melting pot of a country. But at that point, you know, that 98 team was seen as, this is the new France. You know, we are cosmopolitan and we're diverse and we've got people, you know, we're at peace with our colonial history and all that. Of course, things have changed a bit since then in the last 20 odd years, but that's a whole other story. Yeah, so I mean, he was a huge figure in that, but it was the way he played in that 98 World Cup. I mean, I remember watching it, and I've said the same about Pirlo in this series, but again, I remember watching one of the early games on TV, and it had a camera angle where most of it was shown from, it seemed to be from really high up, and you got a lot of full pitch views rather than, you know, close up on the action. And again, every pass that he played was the right pass, which is, you know, it's an impossible thing to do in the heat of battle. Particularly in the heat of a World Cup, but it was immaculate. Everything that he did was the right ball, not just the right pass, but played at the right weight, at the right height, into the run or into the feet or whatever it was that, you know, the player receiving it wanted. And then you get the other side of Zidane, when of course he manages to get himself sent off in the World Cup, which is, you know, the other side, because it was all the way through his career, that kind of, there's a rage somewhere bubbling away, which again, I think, you know, goes back to his family roots and stuff, and the way he was treated in France. And there's always that bubbling away alongside, I suppose, Cantona, you know, another Frenchman is similar. Perhaps that's the fuel. That's the fuel that creates the genius. I don't know. But he misses a game. Fortunately, France come through. And then ultimately, he gets to play in the World Cup final, scores goals, wins the World Cup. You know, he's the man of the World Cup, really. On another day, it might have been Ronaldo, might have been the man of that World Cup. But that's, again, that's a whole other world, a different parallel universe. But I think it is France that is the... the Zidane story, even more so than the club football, and that ability to receive the ball any height, any speed, from any direction, whether he's expecting it or not, and just kill the thing stone dead and be into the move that takes him onto his pass or onto his run or onto his shot instantly, without seeming to think about it. It's all such an instinctive thing. That has to be, you get born with that. You cannot manufacture that. You know, there's that famous thing about Dennis Bergkamp. They said for the greats, the seconds last longer. Well, for Zidane, the seconds seem to last about 10 minutes because he just seems to have so much time to make his decisions and deal with the ball. There just never seems to be any sense of hurriedness or anything at all about it. It's... he's just in complete control. That's the only way to explain it. He's in complete control of everything, except his emotions at sometimes, but that's another element.
I certainly think that's, like you say, one of the key things about maybe playing the role that he did as well, kind of in that creative role. Obviously, it's quite an, I'm not going to say it's an emotional position to play in, but you are sort of the heartbeat of the team. You are linking everybody together and creating for other people and trying to actually tie in who's doing what and getting the best out of others. And the comment you made about his passing, I know Cruyff always talks about you need to, a good passer will pass it to the player exactly where they want it, just in front of them, on their strongest foot, in their stride, to maintain tempo and actually move us forward as a team. And you get a lot of those clips on social media, don't you, where it's like, you know, 2 minutes of Zidane in the Champions League. You actually look at him and it looks effortless, absolutely effortless. And that's one of the things that strikes you about him. One of the interesting parts of the 98 World Cup final, see, is the whole Ronaldo incidents that happens that I spoke about on one of my icons for him. And actually Zidane keeps it together, holds his team together. And actually they had some phenomenal talent in that France team, but everybody did really think it was Brazil's World Cup. And like we say, if maybe there hadn't been the incident that happened before the game with Ronaldo, we may well be talking about Zidane slightly differently. Because, you know, he was great for Juve and they won back-to-back titles while he was there. But they hadn't got over the line in the Champions League. A great Lippi side. It was a brilliant team. You know, Boxic had been there, Del Piero, Vieri, and he fitted in seamlessly. I suppose when he goes to Real Madrid, that's kind of the big shift, isn't it? Because if you actually look at, we've talked about stats and, you know, a lot of these icons have got ridiculous goals and assist tallies. When you look at Zidane's, it doesn't kind of blow you away and you don't kind of think, wow, this is absolutely incredible. I think for Juve, he was getting 4 or 5 goals a season, 4 or 5 assists, but his final season, he gets 6 goals and 14 assists. And then he goes to Real, who spend close to 80 million euros, I think, at the time. This was kind of real, real Galactico era Real. And Zidane, was he the perfect man for the Galactico era?
You pose a really good question there, Rob, because in some senses, you know, we've talked about other people in this series, who won everything. And not just won everything. They kept winning everything. Yeah. And Zidane, when you think of how great a player he was, you know, I mean, Messi and Ronaldo have changed the argument. We keep bringing them up in these things, but they have changed the argument a bit. But I mean, I think you'd have to make a case for Zidane being perhaps the best player in the world for a decade before them. You know, he's certainly in the conversation anyway. And, you know, he didn't win as much as you would think he might have done, you know, in that period. As you say, Juventus, they didn't get over the line in the Champions League. I mean, you know, we were speaking just before we started about Paul Lambert, of all people, marking him out of a Champions League final. And, you kind of think of Zidane, well, he must have won everything. And then I suppose, you know, we are judging him by unrealistic standards because he did win the World Cup in 98. He did win the Euros in 2000. He did win a couple of, you know, Champions Leagues with Real Madrid in the end and all of that. So, you know, you are holding him to a different kind of account, I suppose. But I think a lot of what he did was intangible. It isn't necessarily the final ball for the assist. Yeah, I mean, assists, it's a very peculiar measure, I always think. Because quite often an assist will be, it's hit him on the back and drop for the fella who then sticks the ball in the back of the net. Or whatever. Yeah, the real part of an assist can come three passes before you score the goal. So, and I think Zidane, there was plenty of that in his career. So I'm not sure that statistics tell his story in the way that, you know, for instance, Gerd Müller, who we've talked about, they pretty much tell the whole tale for his career. Zidane, I think it's something different. And one of the things I like about Zidane is, as I've got older, football to me is less about kicking a ball around. I like football more for what it tells you about people and there they are. And, you know, again, that's a great point you make about Ronaldo didn't hold it together and Zidane did. And he was the face of that team. And winning a home World Cup, we used to think that having home advantage in a World Cup was a great thing and that automatically meant you. And it stopped being that for quite a while. But France did win it on home soil. And that's a very special kind of pressure to have the entire nation sitting there waiting for you to deliver. And he was the one, you know, as you said, plenty of talent in that French team, but he was the one. Certainly in 98, he was absolutely the one that you know, brought the trophy home. And that says a lot about a person's ability to be there at the moment when it matters most. And that's why the people in this series are icons, because they do it in the big moments. It's the proverbial, or can he do it on a Tuesday night at Stoke? Well, who cares, by and large? It's really, can he do it in the Cup final? Can he do it in a World Cup final? Can he do it in the Champions League final? Those are the moments when the big people really step up and make the difference. That's when they earn their huge salaries. And Zidane, certainly post-98, when he got that World Cup behind him, that was when he started to become somebody who was delivering things. But again, you know, you go back to that always being on the edge, you know, and it's all the cliches, isn't it? It's a fine line between genius and madness and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you look at somebody like him and you think, yeah, that's probably true, actually. You know, because it is, there is that emotion in football. And if you are the difference maker, if you are the one that everybody's looking at before you go out and people are saying, right, God, who's going to make the difference? Who's going to win us this game? Oh, it's him. That's a lot to carry on your shoulders every, you know, all the time. At Real Madrid, perhaps it was a little bit less pressured because it was such a, they were the Galacticos. They got God knows how many players. With France, it was a little bit different, I think. It always was. He's the one. He's the player. And wearing that, carrying that must have been some. Yeah, I mean, you look at 2002 when they were defending the World Cup, and there he was. He missed the first two with injury. Came back for the third game when he was nowhere near fit. And France got knocked out in the group stage. He's the worst defence of a World Cup ever. That tells you all you need to know about who's the fella who makes the difference.
It's really true. And do you know what? I thought about this when we've been talking about Zidane and talking about some of these icons. Some of them are icons because of longevity. Obviously, Zidane's got longevity. But if you ask a fan, name me three moments about Zidane. Two goals in a World Cup final in 98. The volley in the Champions League final against Leverkusen. And then a Panenka and headbutting Materazzi in a World Cup final. Like, that is iconic, you know, as much as the young kids would tell us what's iconic or not at the minute. He's got three genuinely iconic moments in his career. Some people barely get one for their club. They don't even have like an iconic moment in their club's history. This man has had three iconic moments in all of football's history. You know, and I think, like you say about the assists and the passes, I think for Real Madrid, you know, playing a raking 50-yard ball for Roberto Carlos to lay on Ronaldo or Raul's plate is just as good as someone who gets an assist because they pass 5 yards to someone who's better than them, you know, and who knocks it in the net. But I think actually for Zidane, You know, he gets player of the tournament at Euro 2000, which gets forgotten about a little bit. And that France team in Euro 96 that he was kind of a bit part player from, they got knocked out in the semis as well. So if you actually look, they got semis in 96, won it, the World Cup in 98, won the Euros in 2000. So the shock of 2002 was enormous because they were such a strong team. Who knows what would have happened if Zidane had actually been fully fit for that. They certainly wouldn't have been beaten in that opening game, I don't think. I think it would have been a very, very different team because, again, if you're an icon, your team needs you.
Absolutely.
You know, even in at Real Madrid, the way they were built, they had to have all their Galacticos on form at the right time. I think it's telling that when Zidane arrived at Real, they won the Champions League and the following season they won the league. So those first two seasons he's won a Champions League and a league title off the back of winning, you know, already a European championship and a brilliant season at Juventus the year after. So he had those really high moments, but they were iconic moments, especially, I mean, we'll probably talk about 2006 a little bit now, because when you do it something like that on the world stage, it lives long, long in the memory. And he was basically retiring, wasn't he? This was effectively his last ever game in football. He'd already retired from that. You know, they were struggling to qualify. He came back. Straight away, he was made captain. And Domenech was not really everybody's favourite France manager, shall we say. But he got them to a final. You know, he got them to a final. And it's one of the most memorable World Cup finals probably ever, isn't it?
It's one of those things, you know, I mean, again, we talked about vulnerability and frailty and all that stuff. It's hard to work out, isn't it, whether it would have been a better way for it to end with him, with Buffon not making that save from the header and France win the World Cup 2-1, or whether it's better that his final game, his final act, this great, wonderful footballer, his head but an Italian centre-half in the chest. And then there's that fantastic picture of him walking past the World Cup trophy on his own, walking off. You know, it's like the end of a Western. He walks off into the sunset or something like that. In a way, that's better. I'm sure not the way he would have wanted it, but in a way, you know, for we're talking about icons and we're talking about iconography. That kind of, there's something deeply perfect about that in a very warped, dark sort of way. And I mentioned that save from, but I think that's got a lot to do with him getting sent off. Because you look at Zidane's reaction to the save, and he's absolutely furious that Buffon's made that save. I mean, he's impressed with the save, obviously, but he's furious and he's screaming and shouting and, you know, into the air. And then, what is it, 5 minutes later, after Materazzi's wound him up a bit, he's headbutting him and he's getting sent off, not by the referee, not by the linesman, but by the fourth official, who shouldn't be doing that kind of thing anyway. So it's I think it turns that into not the it's a wonderful life ending, but it turns it into a, you know, a proper, oh, that's what life's like. So sort of, and that's better, really. You know, I mean, that is kind of a better feel for it in the end. And as I said, that combustibility that he had, 14 times I think he was sent off in his career, which is, you know, even in the modern era, that's quite a lot of sendings off, particularly for somebody who wasn't, you know, a centre-half tackling people and whatever. 14 times getting sent off. I think he said 12 of them were for provocation. Well, okay, but, you know, probably after the third or fourth, you might have thought, we'll ignore this provocation there, shall we? We'll learn the lesson, but no. If you're writing a film, if you're writing a book, I like that ending. I think that's a great ending. It's it's tragic. It's Shakespearean, really. You know, it's got all those things to it, and it's how it should be somehow. I can't quantify it any more than that, but I think, as I say, I like what football tells me about character now more than actually like watching them kick the ball around, and that tells you everything about character, good and bad. I mean, you know, he's grabbed hold of this French team that wasn't even going to the World Cup. He's hauled them to the World Cup final by virtue of his own, you know. He wins the player of the tournament after having headbutted somebody and walked off in disgrace in the World Cup final. It's perfect, absolutely perfect.
And I think, like you say, it goes a long way to sort of summarise who he was as a person and a player. And I actually think it is kind of a bit of a perfect ending, a little bit in the way that Messi winning the World Cup was perfect for Messi because he had won everything. He had broken every record, and it would be something hanging over him if he hadn't won that, because actually he had literally won everything humanly possible. He's going to have every record or whatever else, maybe apart from Ronaldo playing till he's 45, keeping the goal scoring record so until he gets 1,000 goals or whatever he's trying to do. But actually for Zidane, it kind of fits. You know, he'd lost those couple of Champions League finals for Juve. He'd gone to Madrid. He was part of one of the most expensively assembled squads ever, but they didn't dominate like an Ajax of the 70s or a Bayern or a Real of the 60s in Europe. Everybody thought it was going to be completely dominant. You know, they had Ronaldo, Raul, Figo, Beckham, Zidane, Roberto Carlos, you know, Casillas, you name them, they had them. And actually, probably underachieved quite a bit as a team, because Barcelona weren't anything like what Pep Guardiola's Barcelona became later on. So for me, I agree with you. The fact that he wins the tournament after, you know, knocking Materazzi to the ground with a butt to the chest, I think is brilliant, because he was the player of the tournament. It shouldn't, whether he's headbutted him or not, he's still the player of the tournament. And I think that sort of sums up Zidane, I think. He is just a majestic player who sort of did it his own way. You know, he wasn't always the most public person, was he, in terms of like commercial stuff? But when he did do stuff, you know, whether it's for Adidas or whatever, it was pretty cool. And it looked pretty good. You know, he kind of, right, I'm going to do this bit, but I'm not going to do, you know, Kellogg's cornflakes, or I'm not going to do every single endorsement that I can because I'm a footballer. And actually, I just want to be a really great footballer. Speaking of sort of the end of his football life, he eventually becomes a highly successful manager. We talked a little bit about him as a player in terms of the things that he won, but he becomes massively successful at Real Madrid as a manager. Obviously, he had so many awards, personal awards as a player, but he wins more league titles than he did as a player at Real. He gets a Champions League when he was Ancelotti's assistant. He wins three of his own Champions Leagues as manager, including when they got a league title and a Champions League double. They won the FIFA Club World Cup. Is he even more iconic now because he's won that tournament, as he's done as a manager and as a player with his World Cup and the Euros and his sending off? And is he the ultimate modern icon, dare I say?
It's a spectacular career as a manager, without shadow of a doubt. You know, to win three Champions Leagues is unbelievable. And I've got to say, I don't know about you, Rob, but I can't say I'm entirely convinced by him as a manager, because it returns ludicrous, doesn't it? But I mean, perhaps sometimes the best thing a manager can do is keep out the way and let him get on with it. And perhaps that's the knack he's got. I mean, you don't look at him and think of him in the same terms of what he's changed the game the way Guardiola did. You don't think of those three Real Madrid Champions League wins, where they revolutionised the way the game was played. They had this fantastic innovation. They had this, you know, they just had some brilliant players who were allowed to be brilliant players. And as I say, maybe his greatest gift was, well, I'm Zidane, so, you know, they want to play for him because he's Zidane. They want, you know, they want to please the greatest footballer that they saw when they were growing up, probably, you know, somebody who was a hero to them. And then, you know, they want to live up to that. And he just thinks, well, they're great players. They know what to do. I'll let them do it. You know, I think the fact that he hasn't really come back into management since Real Madrid tells a story that various times, I think he's been linked with, well, everybody's been linked with Chelsea at some point. But, you know, I don't see that Zidane going to Chelsea would be anything other than an absolute disaster. Because I don't think he's got that. That just doesn't seem to be his personality. He doesn't, you know, he's a quiet, he does seem to be quiet and unassuming in that sense. Leads by example, certainly as a footballer. And Real Madrid was his club by that point. You know, he'd been a great player there, won the Galacticos, won Champions Leagues, blah, blah, blah. He was a good fit there. I don't know that he would be a good fit anywhere else, necessarily. I don't know that he's a great manager. But in terms of his status, having those, you know, La Liga titles and three Champions League medals on the mantelpiece, I mean, it just adds to the legend, doesn't it? But you know, do you remember him saying anything at any point during his managerial career? Do you remember a quote? Do you remember a nugget of wisdom You know, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti, there's every year there's something that Ancelotti says that, that strikes a chord. There's something that Guardiola says that Fergie said that, you know, whoever it is. I don't remember Zidane ever saying anything. I just don't see him as a great manager. But then again, that shows what I know because he won three Champions League. So just, you know, keeping your mouth shut and letting great players be great players. Perhaps that's not a bad idea after all.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, how you don't have to change anything to change things. You know, he made that team into, I mean, they were already, you know, had a really strong squad. Ronaldo was there, Gareth Bale was there. They had all the quality. I am surprised he hasn't come back in because obviously he'd managed the Real Madrid sort of second team, the Castilla team. So you kind of think, oh, actually, he's doing a little bit like what Pep did. You know, he's getting the grounding, getting sort of minutes on the coaching pitch and he's assistant manager and he's working through what he needs to get to that point. Because he only actually spent 2.5 years at Madrid in his first spell, wins three Champions Leagues. I mean, why on earth he'd want to manage any more after he'd won a lot of those? And then obviously came back later on after that. And he's been out of work from a managerial point of view since May 2021. But why do it? You know, why put yourself under that pressure? Because I can't even imagine what it's like managing Real Madrid, even if you have got some of the best players in the world, when you've got newspapers that are just devoted to your club that come out every day with stories and you've got to deal with players and manage it. But, you know, he managed it brilliantly and he's got the rewards from it in terms of his career. I think, obviously, he's quite a recent player probably in this series, but for me, I think, I don't know whether you agree, Dave, but I think he could fit into any of the top teams at the minute quite easily. Could you see him at Real Madrid maybe taking them to March? I mean, he could probably play at his age now, couldn't he, to be fair, and probably still be pretty good. Any modern-day players who've got that little bit of flair and flash in terms of their passing, their ability, their sort of creativeness, maybe a De Bruyne type?
I suppose somebody like him is the closest, isn't it? I always think, you know, not replacing him with Modric, because obviously it was years later that Modric turned up, but that is a sort of a nice sort of, you know, line from Zidane to Modric, different, you know, not as flashy, not as, but influential in a different kind of way. Sort of the brains and the heart of the team. I think he's done a great job at Madrid in that way. But yeah, I mean, somebody like De Bruyne probably is the closest in terms of his style. But yeah, I mean, again, we've said this with probably all of the icons as we've gone through it. You know, any team in the world would be happy to have him in his prime. Again, it's just the way that the world has moved on and the game has moved on. How much would he have to change to adapt to playing in modern day football? And yeah, you know, every one of these greats, whatever era they've played in, would adapt to modern football because they're footballers, they're natural footballers. Whatever era they grew up in, they would have been great footballers. I just think, you know, sometimes it's funny, isn't it? Because modern football, I say modern football, you know, the football the last sort of 10, 12 years. At the same time, it seems so slow and so quick. It's a very weird balance that football has become. It seems to take forever to get somewhere. And then when it gets somewhere, it all happens very quick. And again, you know, we've talked about, well, he would have to do something else in his game that he didn't do in the past. And, and he would be able to do it. But what would you lose in that? I mean, that film, the 21st century portrait, I mean, it's Real against Villarreal, I think, if I remember rightly. And for 70-odd minutes, absolutely nothing happens. He doesn't get the ball. He's just roaming. He's walking around. He scratches at the turf with his boot like a chicken in a farmyard. It's peculiar. And then all of a sudden, in the last 20, it comes to life. And he's like a magnet. The ball just finds him constantly. And every time he gets the ball, something happens. Something magical happens, you know, he creates the goals and they come from behind to win 2-1. And then he gets sent off at the end, which again, I mean, God, how lucky was the film. Like 17 cameras all on Zidane and they get that. Yeah, I mean, after 17 minutes, they must have been thinking, oh, Christ, we've blown the budget here. And then that 20 minutes at the end makes for a fantastic film. And again, that is who Zidane is. But nowadays, if he'd had 17 minutes where he hadn't had the ball, he'd have had the hook. No way. There's no way he's staying on the pitch. So it is, you know, football. We've got football of the 60s is not football of the 90s, which is not football of the 2020s. That's inevitable. But I do sometimes think we're slow at the wrong part of the pitch and quick at the wrong part of the pitch. We're recording this the night after the goalkeepers at Manchester United, Tottenham have had have illustrated sometimes that you know, the slow build-up is not always the best thing. Yeah, I don't know. If you when you want to slow the game down, slow it down in the final third of the other team and make something happen, which is that was what Zidane did.
Yeah, I think modern football could only be described as the more time spent on the ball is by the players furthest away from the goal, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But one point you made there, Dave, about, and it's quite a nice one to wrap up, is you called him a magnet. And actually, you could probably ascribe that to any part of his career. That France team was sort of a magnetic. He was the magnetic force kind of within that team. Even if you jump right to his Champions Leagues, he's the first manager ever to win the trophy in three consecutive seasons in the Champions League. And he's only one of three managers alongside Bob Paisley and Carlo Ancelotti to win it three times. Everything seems to be drawn to him because we're not calling Zidane a Bob Paisley, absolutely no way, or a Carlo Ancelotti, but everything is drawn to him. You know, Materazzi in that 2006 final, it's drawn to him. The Buffon save, if it was from a different player, would we remember it? But it was Zidane. Zidane scored the Panenka that hit the bar and went in. He scored the two goals in the World Cup final. He scores that volley against Leverkusen. If that's Raul, we go, oh, what a good striker he was. But now, because it's Zidane with the ball coming out of his hair and that all-white kit and his Adidas Predators, everything is drawn to him. And I think that magnetism is probably one of the things that really makes him an icon. And a perfect place to kind of summarise a series of 12 icons of football past. We've got a lot of icons to get through. Anyone who's got a hold of the magazine will see that there's a range of icons, there's 60 of them. So our ambitious goal is to take you through them all and work through all these icons, you know, through the TFT team and look at all these different eras and compare them. But Dave, I'll leave you with the last word on if you're going to pick, there's plenty of memories to pick from about Zidane. What's the one for you that you kind of hold up and think that is really iconic?
Well, it is the walking off the pitch past the World Cup in the 2006 final. But that just seems unfair. So it's got to be the volley, hasn't it? It's got to be the volley in the Champions League final. We'll leave it on a high.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll always say with a lot of podcasts, we don't always get to talk about a lot of football, but that goal is one of the purest strikes that you'll ever see. So we'll leave Zidane's goal in that Champions League final as a lasting memory for everyone. As we sign off our icon series, and certainly we'll join you again with another set of icons. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.